Honorable members, Deputy Minister, delegations from the department, stakeholders, welcome back to Mr. Evans, who was also ill for some time. You are welcome, sir. Honorable Rabin, you were missed yesterday, but I'm happy to see you. Let's continue, with this. Madam Parliamentary Advisor, we are in your able hands now.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Chair, before we ask the legal advice to proceed, can we just, I know that we're supposed to start on 8, notice of expropriation, can we just go back one page to the previous chapter or clause, intention to expropriate, the prohibition, the last was 7B1. It's at the bottom of page 10. We just want to make a proposal to include something there, to add wording to the, if expropriating authority decides, one, to proceed to expropriate, it reads, it must serve a notice of expropriation in terms of section 8.1 within a reasonable time. And then we want to add to that the following words, provided that it has made a reasonable effort to reach an agreement on compensation within a specified time frame, and provided that the determination of just and equitable compensation will be determined as soon as reasonably possible thereafter. And that's in the interest of reasonableness.
Sounds very detailed, and we don't have sides of the contribution, so I have to ask you to go through what you have just suggested again.
I'll gladly do that, Mr. Chairman. Section 7B1 on page 10 in the B list of the bill, it currently reads, if the expropriation authority decides, link 1, to proceed to expropriate, it must serve a notice of expropriation in terms of section 8.1 within a reasonable time. Okay, that's fine, and but then add that we put a comma and then add the following words. Provided that it has made a reasonable effort to reach an agreement on compensation within the specified time frame, and provided that the determination of just and equitable compensation provided that it has made a reasonable effort to reach agreement on compensation within the specified time frame. Are you with me? Can I carry on? And provided that the determination of just and equitable compensation will be determined as soon as reasonably possible thereafter.
I let members comment on the suggestion, but it almost sounds as if you need another point in order to cover what you have suggested, but members, there's a colleague who has come up with a possible addition. What are your views there too? And then obviously, I also invite the legal advisors of the department and parliament to comment. I don't see the state advisor, there's his colleague, oh, thank you, sir. I'm fairly sure if you're done.
Thank you, sir. Once the content of the action is sounds plausible. I just need to know why the honorable member coming up with this suggestion. Then we will be able to move along, you know, with the informing and making informed comments. Because there's always the assumption that things will be done within a reasonable period of time. Why special clause now? And this is not intended to defeat what she's writing, not at all. We just want to get into her mind, so suspect things.
Wait a little while. Let's get the inputs of your colleagues, and when everybody has spoken, then you'll be able to get more time for a rejoinder. Honorable Madrop.
No, thanks, Honorable Chair. My colleague has asked what is the reason for this petition. You know, Chair, I think when this appeal, all the words that the colleague has added, the reasonable effort, and also negotiations for the equitable compensation and so on, it's part of this. I don't know why really can we add that one. Because if you say provided it has made a reasonable effort, you know, reasonable effort is part of the process that will be followed. I don't think we can build on this one because it's inclusive, it's part of it. And when you read all three, it must inform the owner or holder of the rights accordingly in writing within a reasonable time. You know, reasonable time, as the colleague was asking, it's there all the time. I don't know why can we now add it, because even that job is there, you know, as an equitable, you know, compensation is part of the bill. I don't think really it's something that we can add, because it's really part of the bill, Honorable Chair. It's part of the process, as the colleague was saying. It's part, it will be followed, reasonable negotiations. You even say yesterday, willing seller, willing buyer, you know, you check whether the offer that has been made, that is a reasonable thing that you'll be doing. I don't know why. I can't hear well because they are talking, Chair. Once we are really, it's disturbing. Because we're living when they talk. Yeah. So I think, Honorable Chair, this thing is part of it. It's saying within a reasonable time is there, you know, reasonable time, just equitable is part of this thing. So to add each and every sentence, I don't think it will make a difference, because it's part of the process.
Members, I would also just like to remind you, there is chapter 6, clause 21 that speaks to mediation. Having said that, Honorable Stolle.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I compare with Honorable Sultan and Mr. Kamakova, because if you read the second one.
Would you kindly speak into the mic, sir?
If you can read the second one. To continue with the negotiation on compensation in accordance with Section 16, it must inform the homeland on the whole of the right accordingly, in writing within a reasonable time. And then the following one is not to proceed with the expropriation of property. It must inform the owner or the holder of the right accordingly, in writing within a reasonable time, and must update the notice of decision not to proceed in accordance with Section 24(2). What the Honorable has said, actually it's been covered here. And I'm trying to understand why must we put another sentence on top of this one?
Honorable Member, thank you. Honorable Jay,
you may
have rejoined them.
Mr. Stephen, it's not a major concern, but it's just an effort to make a contribution and improve the bill here. Because of the wide variety of expropriating property, some could just sit and wait for the 40 days to pass. And we would just want to make sure that they keep moving and that they just sit and wait for 40 days.
The branch of the contributions by members is that it is adequately covered, but legal advisors, what do you say, parliamentary shall we start with you, ma'am?
Thank you, Chairperson. I also would like to concur with the view that it is already covered in the bill, even when dealing with compensation, it will give you the time. Because we want to sort of have a chronological order of events rather. So we don't want a situation whereby we add something then it's going to mess up the whole chronology of because it's a process, the process flow. Thank you, Chairperson.
Any other views, State Lord Vance?
I'm not sure I agree with the point you leave the clause.
So shall we pass that? Can we get to number 8, please?
Notice of expropriation. 8.1. If the expropriating authority decides to expropriate a property, the expropriating authority must cause a notice of expropriation to be served on the owner and the non-holders of unregistered rights, as the case may be, whose rights in the property are to be expropriated. 2. The expropriating authority must cause a copy of the notice of expropriation to be A. published in accordance with Section 24.2. Provided that if the notice of expropriation has taken place by publication in terms of Section 24.1.3, the publication in terms of this paragraph is not required. B. Deliver to a holder of an unregistered right in the property of whom he or she is aware and whose rights are not to be expropriated. And C. If the property is land or a right in land, delivered to 1. The municipal manager of the municipality where the property is situated. Provided that if the expropriating authority is the municipal council, the delivery of such notice is not required. 2. The Director General is responsible for rural development and land reform, for mineral resources, and for water affairs and sanitation, provided that if the expropriating authority is the executive authority of one of the departments concerned, the delivery of the notice on the relevant Director General is not required. 3. A holder of a mortgage bond registered in the deeds office in respect of the property concerned.
Honourable Member. Thank you, Honourable Member. Are you done? Honourable Sudan?
If that is not superfluous, I would support it. But if it seemed to be superfluous, you know, with anything not necessary, we would just have very, very levels until it. But maybe the advisor could offer a better opinion on the matter. Thank you.
Madam Boyer.
Chairperson, thank you. For consistency one, it would be advisable or recommendable to include it. And secondly, for the same reasons we explained yesterday, because what is not included is excluded for rules of adaptation, so it makes sense to include it. Thank you.
Thanks. Can we move?
3. A holder of a mortgage bond registered in the deeds office in respect of the property concerned. 4. If the property is subject to a contract contemplated in Section 7432 on the buyer. And 5. If the builder thereon is subject to a lien contemplated in Section 7433 on the builder. 3. The notice of expropriation served as contemplated in subsection 1 must contain A. A statement of the expropriation of the property. B. The full description of the property, including 1. In the case where expropriation applies to a portion of a land parcel, the approximate extent of such portion in relation to the whole. Or 2. In the case where expropriation applies to a right in land, a description of the approximate position of the right in land on such land. J.
Yes.
3B1.
the word approximate. We think it gives rise to create uncertainty, and we would propose that we remove the word approximate so that we create more certainty. So if we say the extent of such property, it should be more exact. It's approximate, it's too uncertain. And the same to 3b2, where again they talk about approximate position of the right and land. Also to remove the word approximate, so it should just be a description of the position of the right in land on such land.
Members, there you have it. Sounds like a friendly amendment. But let's hear what the lawyers say. The lawyers, have a talent. By law.
Let us know the first day, depending on assist me on this one.
Let's hear what you have to say.
Chairperson, thank you. If you remove the word approximate, as some people did as extent, it would imply that the property, the portion of the property that you are attempting to expropriate, must first be surveyed. The survey of land is, by nature, a time-consuming affair. That subdivision diagram done by a land surveyor would also have to be approved by the surveyor general. All of that would greatly extend the time period, the whole process of expropriation. Under normal circumstances, a qualified person such as an engineer would use methods other than physical survey to determine the approximate extent of the land. The final extent, and therefore also the compensation, would be subject to the subsequent survey of the land. If I can give an example, the expropriation amount, the compensation amount, would be expressed also in a rand per hectare basis. So if the approximate extent is 2.12 hectares, but the final survey extent would be 2.12, they would have to be adjusted. But if we remove the word approximate, then we have to survey before we can proceed.
Thank you. Another word there.
Just a follow-up question. In the title deeds, is it not described exactly so you know the extent of the property as described in the title deeds?
Yes.
This scenario only applies to where the state is expropriating a portion of surveyed piece of land. If we are taking the whole, there's the problem because there's a survey diagram duly approved by the Surveyor General, and as you've correctly indicated, also captured in the title deed, extent known. So this is only, let's take an example of a servitude, which is a line servitude that runs across the property, 11 meters wide for our line. It would be fairly accurately calculated by an engineer that's designing the power line, but it would still have to be formally surveyed. Beacons must be placed, and the final work must be authorized or approved by the Chief Surveyor General. And that is what is so time-consuming. And this could also be to the detriment of the owner that wants to move on with his life. And all of that would have to wait until that survey has been completed. If we remove the word approximately.
I'm satisfied with that explanation. Thank you, Mr. Chief.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lane. Honorable President.
Honorable related matter, may I humbly request the meeting to go back to 82B. I don't quite understand why, when we deal with notices of expropriation, we should give a notice of no intention to expropriate, as is stated in that 82B. Why do we have to give a notice not to expropriate? I'm not undermining the statement, but I just want to know the rationale behind giving a notice not to expropriate.
We want to add the which must
unless otherwise agreed, be no earlier than the date of expropriation and no later than 90 days after the date of expropriation. And the purpose of this is to allow the expropriate owner to find alternative accommodation, and that's in the interest of fairness.
Members, today you have the honourable microphone.
Yes, thanks, Chair. Maybe a question of clarity to the colleague. You say which month unless otherwise agreed. You mean agreed between the expropriating authority and the owner? Because if you say agreed,
squeaky, yes, so because they can agree on an earlier date, earlier than 90 days.
Okay. But I'm having a problem here. You know that when we expropriate, because there has been no agreement in the negotiations, if there is no agreement, because I think this particular legislation is trying to say where there is no agreement and this particular property is needed for public interest, it is the authority, the expropriating authority, to act. They can act unilateral because it's after negotiation, remember. If we say must agree on both parties, it's not going to give us a problem if the other parties don't agree, because the expropriating authority has got power to do expropriation. I don't know, maybe the legal team may assist us, because if you say they must agree wherever there has been negotiation and so on.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I can directly answer my colleague. I don't think there's a problem. It's not that they must agree, it's just that they can agree. But if there's no agreement that the date of expropriation be no earlier than 90 days, that's the crucial part. Yeah. But they can agree to earlier, but if there's no agreement, the expropriation must not be earlier than 90 days on the date of such terms, and that's to allow the owner, the expropriated owner, sufficient time, if necessary, find alternative accommodation.
Could we have comments from our legal advisors? I'd like to welcome the teachers and pupils in the gallery. You are welcome. Tanguna. Honorable Madop.
Yes, thank you. No, I think the way the process, because it's not just something that we just come today to say that we are doing it. There is a long process of notice and so on that allows the person that is occupied to start looking for accommodation. Because it's not something that we just come here, appropriate goal. There is a process. Notice that is given, everything that is being given. I don't think we must put a process here, because the process already, there is a clause dealing with the process, there will be a notice, they have realized there will be a notice that is being given, all those particulars. I don't think it would fit very well here. Because now we are, it's a time when we are expropriating after a process. So I don't think we must, in the middle, of expropriating again, reintroduce the process. I don't think it will be fair, because there is a process. We all agree to say that we need a clear process, and then it's stipulated to say one notice will be done, this will be done, all these kinds of notices. Not in the middle of expropriation and then reintroduce again. I disagree with that, Chair.
If I may.
You may, and after the mayor, I'm going to the legal advisors. Yes, madam.
Okay, I think we'll just read the whole thing from three. The notice of expropriation served must contain, okay, then it says the statement of the expropriation, the full description of the property, reasons for expropriation, and then the date. So it gives a number of things. of that it has to do, or the notice must. But if the notice is served today and they tell you the date of expropriation, they say, okay, but you must be up next week. Clearly that's unreasonable. So we're just saying, when the notice of expropriation is served, the date of expropriation, when you must be out, must be sufficient time. It doesn't have to be 90 days. We've mentioned 90 days, but it could be, say, 6 days. But it must be a reasonable time. Otherwise, they would serve the notice and they say, by the way, it's going to be out tomorrow. And that would be clearly not fair. So I think it's reasonable to expect that expropriated owners get a reasonable amount of time in which to vacate the property.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I revert to Honourable Madrop.
Yes, sir. No, I think we do have a problem. We do not have one. When you read, it says the date of expiration.
Would you kindly lift up your mic or speak into it?
If you look at E, it's still a process. It's saying the date of expropriation, or the case may be, the date from which the property will be used temporarily. So we'll be given the date when this particular property will be used. And also stating the period of such temporary use. You see? Because if you look at G also, although we are not at them, there will be time when there are an urgent expropriation, you know, because of the urgent matter like disasters and so on and so forth. So if we are saying again, under this long process, we are going to give 90 days again, after the process has, you know, unfolded, you know, and then again you say you give another notice. I think, as it is being presented, the process here, I think it's reasonable. It's reasonable.
Mr.
Chair,
I think we're talking past each other. We don't quite understand. I agree.
I'd like you to talk to each other.
Through you, Mr. Chair. We're talking to each other through you. I can see my colleague emphasizes the process, and that it's a fairly time-consuming process, and I don't think we disagree on that. But she talks as if there's a process prior to this notice of expropriation. What I'm worried about, my concern, for the reason underlying my proposal I made the amendment, is that the notice could be served today, and then they tell you, so in the notice of expropriation, they tell you the date of expropriation, maybe tomorrow. And then clearly that's unfair. If you receive a notice today to be out tomorrow, the date of expropriation is tomorrow, that's unfair. So we must be reasonable towards the expropriated owner to find sufficient time to find alternative accommodation. So it's just part of the process that my colleague is talking about. The notice must be served of intention to expropriate, and then there must be a notice of when what the date of the actual expropriation will be, and that must be a reasonable time. I think otherwise we will run into trouble if, you know, you can theoretically put unreasonable or time limits or very little, allow very little time for an owner to move.
Thank you, Honourable Dreyer. Legal advisors, if there's anybody would like to. Thank you.
Can I try to assure you, it's not necessarily a legal question, it's a policy decision, it's a committee decision, so to speak, but if I were to assist the committee as possible as I can, if you look into 9 up to 8, if I can just read that, and then I'm going to read 4 as well, maybe that will assist. The expropriating authority, or the person on whose behalf the property was expropriated, as the case may be, must take possession of the expropriated property on the date stated in terms of Section 3F, I mean, AJF, or such other date as may be agreed upon between the expropriating authority and the expropriated owner or expropriated holder, as the case may be. Which in this instance for me is the word that we are seeking to add in the previous clause. That's 1. Then if I read 4, if the expropriated owner or expropriated holder, as the case may be, desires the place desires to place expropriating authority in possession of expropriated property practice that they contemplated in A3F, and that expropriated owner or expropriated holder, as the case may be, and the expropriating authority do not agree upon a date on which the possession of the property passes to the expropriating authority. The expropriated owner or expropriated holder, as the case may give the expropriating authority notice in writing of no less than 20 days before the date on which the expropriated owner or the expropriated holder desires to place the expropriating authority in possession of the property, in which case possession of the property passes to the expropriating authority on that date. I think that's how about that. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Adam, are you saying something?
Thank you, Chair. There is a reason of equality.
Mr. Stephen, no, it's actually making it worse for me. Not better. I'm now getting more worried. Of course, if you read 9.2a, which the legal advisor just read to us, says that the expropriating authority or person to today must take possession of the expropriate of the property on the date stated in terms of section A3F. That's the point I raised to. So the expropriating authority must take possession of the property on the date stated in 2A3F. Where was it? Yeah. All such other dates may be agreed upon. Yeah. But if they don't agree, then they must take possession on that. And it may be, it could be just too short notice, and I think it's unreasonable to expect people to move. If the date of the notice is not, the date of the expropriation is not stipulated in the notice of expropriation, it could be abused. Gives the authorities unfettered powers.
Wonderful, Matros.
So I think the date of expropriation will be set. So it's not just to say expropriation. If you read it says the date of expropriation. So it will be indicated the date of expropriation. The parliamentary advisor has indicated there will be a notice that will be given in writing of 20 days. I think it covers again that we are worried about on line four.
Honourable Madam, thank you very much. Honourable Shitoni.
Thank you, Chair Chairperson. Chairperson, I was checking on 4B. If that one doesn't cover the covenant of the member, in the case where the aspiration applies to a portion of the land parcel, a survey diagram or stress then showing the person's position of strike portion in relation to the whole. Thank you, sir.
If we can also look at 7.2 E and F, notice of intention to expropriate. A notice of intention to expropriate must include E, the intended date of expropriation, or as the case may be, the intended date from which the property will be used temporarily for the intended period of such temporary use. F, the intended date on which the expropriating authority will take possession of the property. So the notice will include those days. I come to that page.
Honourable
Mr. James, I go back to 7.2F, which the legal advisors pointed at intended date. So the notice of intention to expropriate must include intended date of the expropriation. But that could still be tomorrow. You could put any date there. There's no limit on the period provided. So we're just pleading to put in a limit, a time limit, a lot shorter than, so to allow sufficient time for the expropriated owner to make alternative arrangements. But in theory, as it stands out, there's no time limit, so you can give notice of intention, and the token and the expropriation will take place next week. So with a final notice when you do that, because say, well, it's going to happen next week. But nobody set a limit on the time, so that the owner, the expropriator, can make alternative arrangements. But I don't seem to find support here from the other members, so I think we may have to disagree, agree to disagree on this one.
I think it's covered adequately, because if you look at G, 7G, 2G, the intended rate on which, or in relation to any person who may be affected by the intended expropriation, the loss of the expropriating authority to give an address within 50 days after the publication of the said notice, subject to section 25. So I think it's adequately covered here.
Thank you, shall we move? If there's a disagreement in regards to that, then we'll agree to the city.
A3G. Except in the case of an expropriation contemplated in section 22, the amount of compensation offered by the expropriating authority or agreed to by the expropriating authority and the owner and the holder of an unregistered right, as the case may be. 4. The notice of expropriation that is contemplated in subsection 1 must be accompanied by documents detailing the following. A. The date or dates on which the expropriating authority proposes to pay the compensation and any interest paid or inspect thereof in terms of section 13. B. In the case where the expropriation applies to a portion of a land parcel, a surveyed diagram or sketch plan showing the appropriate position of such portion in relation to the whole. C. In the case where the expropriation applies to a right in land, a survey diagram or sketch plan on which the appropriate position of the right in land on such land is indicated, unless the right in land is accurately described without such survey diagram or sketch plan. D. An explanation of what the offer of compensation referred to in subsection 3G comprises of, together with supporting documents detailing how the offer of compensation was determined, if applicable. E. A directive calling upon the expropriated owner and expropriated holder, as the case may be, to submit in writing the names and addresses of all holders of unregistered rights in the property and particulars of such rights, other than those fenced in accordance with section 55A and 72F, if any, to the extent that such names, addresses, and particulars are within the knowledge of the expropriated owner. F. A statement that if a person has an unregistered right in respect of the property of which the expropriating authority has no knowledge when making the offer of compensation, the expropriating authority may adjust that offer. G. A statement informing the expropriated owner and expropriated holder, as the case may be, that he or she may request a translation of the notice of expropriation in the official language of his or her choice. And H. A statement drawing an expropriated owner, expropriated holder, or any other person's attention to the provisions of section 27. F.A. Rights in a property may be expropriated from different owners and holders of unregistered rights in the same notice of expropriation. B. A separate offer of just and equitable compensation.
Yes, honorable member.
Yes, sir. Point 5. I was just saying that as well it is acceptable that all the affected parties included in the same notice. I think it is vital that the copy must be provided to those who are affected so that it must be sure that they are aware of what is happening. For example, we do remember there are farmers who are there and they are also having the farm workers. So we believe that the notice must be given even to those farm dwellers or the farm workers who stay there.
Thank you, Honorable Kobani. Comments from other members?
Chairperson, I think that the suggestion that has been made by the member company is actually reasonable, because if you check all the processes that people are following need to be known by all affected members or stakeholders.
Thank you. Honourable Member. Madam?
No, thank you, Honourable Chair. Maybe before I comment on that, I need to get a clarity whether this unregistered holders of unregistered rights, does it include them or is something else? Because they can't be expropriated, but they have got rights.
You know, the holders of rights because they are staying in the farm. Does it not include this? I want to get that clarification and then comment on that. Can we have clarity on whether the farm workers, dwellers are also included? What happens in that case?
Maybe to try and kill two birds with one stone, cruelty to animals. If a portion of land is expropriated and farmed for Eskom power lines or whatever, then the rights of unregistered, the holders of unregistered rights, those rights would also be expropriated. Okay. Hence the question, which is the other issue. And what's intended here, and perhaps the legal advice can say more convincingly, but it would be the same notice, or it could be the same notice, but multiple copies of the same notice. In other words, it's not the one physical copy. The former owner gets it, and all of the others can get it. But rather than have to issue, go to, dozens of different, it might be hundreds, literally, it would be the same notice, because it's the same expropriation, but affecting numbers of different parties. So they would get the same notice, but copies of the same notice. I think that's what's intended. Thanks for the clarity. Honourable Michael.
Yeah, no, thanks, Chair. I'm covered, Chair, because I was of the view that those unregistered holders are the people that are staying, but they are not the owners, like farm workers and so on. So I think we agree on this because they are not that.
There's a concurrence. Shall we proceed? Honourable
Chair. No, I also concur. So everybody agrees, but I think the wording should then just be amended to make that very explicit, that it should be copies of claim notice eventually should be handed to all affected individuals, households, on the households. So it could be multiple households on a farm, for example. So it must be, such notice must be provided to each affected household.
Let me give Honourable Mr. Adams opportunity, and then followed by Honourable Mycroft.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I think it is covered under Chapter 9 Related Matters, Section 24, on page 20. That all says that it covers that. I think it covers the reasonable. Even 24 say whenever government must or may deliver to terms of this act, delivery must take place at delivery and then continuous aid to the owner and holder of an unregistered right in a property known to the expropriating authority at the threat appointed in terms of section 7. 1. The notice of expropriating the notice in terms of section 11. 2. Or other document as the case may be. And then it carries on further. So I think it is adequately covered.
Thank you, Honourable. member. Honorable Dre, I've noted you, but Honorable Madoka,
yes.
I'll just call you.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair. I think what my colleague Dre has raised, it is covered on 5A, because it says the right and the property may be expropriated from different owners and holders of a registered right in the same notice of expropriation. So they will be given, it will be the same notice, but they will open. The unregistered one will be also given the same notice that has been set on the owner. Yes.
Thank you, Honorable Matrop. Honorable Treya, I'm not sure if your smile indicates concurrence. I don't want to venture where Honorable Fertani went yesterday, spoke about body language. Madam.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, of course, we're not fighting about this issue. It's not that we disagree. We actually agree. But all we're suggesting is that we just add a few words to that particular clause to make it more explicit. We don't have to go pages further on to say, oh, it implies or it's assumed or so on. So just to protect other people living on a property who are not the owners but who have rights there, it's just to make it explicit and that they are also acknowledged and make sure that they get the notice as well. So, but it's not fighting, it's just an addition to make it explicit.
Thank you very much. Madam Matro.
So I think the colleague is correct. We are agreeing. And I think the challenge was that maybe if it is found on the other page, but on this one, it is the same section 5A. It says it is the same notice of expropriation. When you read and finish and complete the sentence of section 5, subsection A, it does say it is the same notice of expropriation. So all the farm dwellers or holders that are unregistered, they will be getting the same notice that has been sent on the owner. They are saying in the same notice. That's why I think the deputy minister was saying not that you are going to start another notice, but the same notice will be duplicated and all the people concerned will be getting that particular notice.
That there is expropriation. So it's in the same page and same flow. Thanks. Honorable Reyes, shall we move on that friendly note, since concurrence?
To say, because we appreciate the point, but text one, right at the beginning of notice of expropriation, says that the notice of expropriation must be served on every affected owner and known holder of a unregistered right. Okay. Just for comfort, just because we agree with you. That's the starting point. Then the issue that we're looking at now, Chairperson, to you, 5A, says that the expropriating authority. The notice that must be served, okay, maybe a single notice that could affect not just a whole of unregistered rights, but maybe multiple owners, farms, X, Y, Z, and so forth. They might all receive the same notice, they might not. And then, as we go to 5B, just answer that as we move to the next thing, but compensation offer is individual and therefore won't be a general single thing. So we understand exactly the points that Andre is raising and we hope that that's how because that's actually right. You can't be left in the dark around these critical matters and that's how we try to cover this.
A separate offer of just and equitable compensation must be stated in respect of each owner or holder mentioned in the notice of expropriation contemplated in paragraph 8. 9. Vesting and possession of expropriated property. 9.1. The effect of an expropriation of property is that A. the ownership of the property described in the notice of expropriation vests in the expropriation authority or in the person on whose behalf the property was expropriated, as the case may be, on the date of expropriation, release from mortgage bonds if applicable.
Yes, Honourable Member.
I need clarity here, especially from the legal advisors. It says one of the
advisors. Could you kindly lower your microphone?
I need clarity here, especially from the legal advisors. The appropriating authority takes the ownership of the property described in the notice of expropriation vests in the expropriating authority on the date of expropriation. So I've got a question about that. On the date of expropriation, if there's a bond, for example, you can't take ownership until the bond is repaid. And until in the deeds office, there was a transfer of ownership to the new owner. You remain the owner until the bond has been released in the bank and there was a transfer in the deeds office. And that is my concern. I don't think a bondholder would agree to transfer if they have not received payment for the mortgage bond. Then you have, if it stands here, you may move off your property, you still have a bond, and then you're not sure that you're going to get the bond, to get the money in order to pay off your bond. So I would like to get clarity on this from the legal advisors.
Mr. Mayor, thank you, Chairperson. It is important that in expropriation there is a transfer of ownership on the date of expropriation. The normal legal requirements of transfer in the deeds office, payment of the bond, is really not incumbent on this process. In terms of expropriation, ownership passes to the expropriating authority. The bond remains in place and will only be undone upon payment to the bondholder. So the fact that ownership has changed from the expropriated owner to the state does not materially affect is not to the detriment of the bondholder. The bondholder will still receive its outstanding bond amount as we deal with in section 19. But it is crucial that you do not have this normal delay of having to apply to the Registrar of Deeds for a formal transfer, conveyancer, etc. The notice of expropriation is the notice of transfer of ownership.
Further clarity sought by Honourable Gray, you may proceed.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I heard the explanation. I'm not satisfied. My concern is still that the expropriated owner may be at a distinct advantage. Say you're a farmer and you're being expropriated, or even just a portion of the farm, and you've got to then move your equipment or whatever you had on that away, and you no longer have the use of that land, but you still have the onus or the burden of a bond, but you can't actually say repay the bond because your means of production has been removed. Why should it be different when there's expropriation than another normal transfer of property from one owner to another owner? I'm worried that the individual could be exploited by the state in such a situation.
Mr. Lehring, your opportunity for a rejoinder, sir.
Thank you, sir. If we look at 9.1a, it makes it clear that on the date of expropriation, the property is released from the mortgage bond, which means the owner's responsibility to pay the bond is suspended, and from the amount of compensation, the bond will be paid. I'm raising an issue because remember, I know that you are going to raise the issue of, so what if the bond exceeds the amount of expropriation, but we'll get to that. But we must be clear that it is not to the detriment of the owner. And we should also not confuse the issue of date of possession with date of expropriation. So the example that was used, Chairperson, that the farmer might have equipment, etc., and even crops on the land, that should be taken into account by the expropriating authority, and the person could be allowed to actually reap the crop, or time is warning to remove equipment before the state takes possession of the property. But what is important is that ownership passes on the date of expropriation.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Honorable Salini.
Thank you, Chair. No, I just want to get advice from the Minister. I just hear you saying that the issue of the bond, you're saying that when the owner is forfeited, whatever the balance of the bond, it will be settled on the compensation, according to your explanation. But my issue, I know that this bill that we're dealing with, all of a sudden, this serious operation compensation, which I don't even think the right way to do it. Because here on Section 25, it still says you, before you can even look at the issue of compensation, you've got to take into account of how the property was acquired. Now, if we follow that route and find out that this property, even though there's a bond, but it was not acquired properly, okay, Section 25, then how do we deal with that issue of saying, no, we're going to settle the bond, but the investigation is clearly saying that this property was acquired illegally, even if you bought it from someone else, but it was an illegal acquisition of that property. Now you're saying that as long as there's a bond, so it's automatic that there's a compensation, and that cannot be correct. Thank you.
Honorable Halini, thanks for your contribution. Honorable Clayer.
Mr. Chair, yeah, I'm still worried about the bond. The owner of the property is responsible to pay back the bond to the bank. If I'm expropriated, if you try to expropriate my house and I've got a bond on it, I still got to pay back the bank. It's an agreement between me and the bank. If you come and you want to expropriate, the bank's got nothing to do with it. So you will then have to enter into a separate agreement with the bank and say, we are now taking over responsibility for this person's, this owner's bond, and we're going to pay it back, the state. There must be some, it must be very explicit, and there must be a separate agreement, because until that happens, the bank will still hold me accountable for the repayment of the bond, even if I don't have the property anymore.
Mr. Mayor, and then the Parliament's legal advice. Yes, sir.
Chairperson, may I suggest that we also consider the issue of Clause 18, which fully deals with the payment of an outstanding bond. So maybe we're running ahead of ourselves.
Please reference it so that for clarity as we move.
Basically, it says that the offer of compensation must be apportioned between the offer dealing with the bond and obviously also taking into effect Clause 19, issue of outstanding rates and other charges attaching to the property. And the remainder would then be paid to the property owner, to the expropriated owner. It could well be that the bond amount could be higher than the just and equitable compensation, and many factors would come into play. One being whether it was an unwise lending of money, whether the financial institution concerned did in fact exercise his mind before it awarded a bond.
but it's far higher than the intrinsic value of the property. So that is also a factor that will be taken into account, and we trust that our courts will find the great decision when dealing with a probable claim from the owner for just an equitable compensation.
Yes, madam.
This makes me even more worried. Just make it concrete. It's easier to talk about a concrete example than in generalized or in legal technical language. I have a house, I've got a bond for 1 million. You expropriate it, you say, sorry, I'm only going to pay you 800,000 rand. That's the true value of this house. Not a million, only 800,000. So you take my house and you pay 800,000 into the for the bond. Now I still have 200,000 left on the bank. I still owe the bank 200,000 rand. So I don't have a house and I still owe the bank 200,000 rand. Where does it leave the owner?
I don't want to say my credit bureau. Parliamentary legal advice.
No, Benson, I was about to say, let me say I'm partially covered, but I also want to try to, in an attempt to respond to the question now. I wanted to bring the attention of the comment to 18, but if look into 18.2, which we'll get to, if the claimant in the case that you've just raised, honorable member, if the claimant and the bondholder or buyer, if the case may be failed to conclude the agreement contemplated in subsection 1B, any of the said person may apply to the court for an order whereby an expropriating authority is directed to pay out the compensation money or payment in terms of the due to in such a manner as the court may determine, and the court may on application issue an order, including an order of court. Obviously, the process of taking the matter to court now for the court to decide if there is an issue of a disagreement in respect of the money to be paid to the bondholder. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Kopan.
Thank you, Chair. Just in addition to it, I just wanted to know in that case now, who's going to pay the legal cost now? As my land or my house is being expropriated, I'm having this additional money that I must pay. Then if the court, I have to go to court, I don't have anything. Who's responsible now for paying the legal cost and everything?
That question is saying at the end, the court will also have to make a determination as to who's going to pay the cost. That is, the order will be made in court as well. Thank you.
Honorable Samini.
You know, Chair, when I should have said it, this bill, because every time we reach a point where where we have an estimate in terms of how to resolve issues, we want to just say, you know, the court will be able to decide on these issues. But we're trying to come up with a period that is very, because that is the key thing of every bill that is sitting here to deal with. It's a document that you're going to take and make sure that it also be implemented. Because it's of no point to sit here and have a deal that we all know that this bill is not implementable. Because then we have a sort of challenge going forward. Because we are still going to have the clarity on the issue of saying, because here we're talking of compensation. I'm saying, as to the Constitution, Section 25, it talks about how the property was acquired. I'm saying, to you, I buy a property that was stolen. Someone just goes there. You know, in the former homeland, in the Eastern Cape, I'll stay there for a long time. There are properties there that belong to the transfer government. You find that this was the house of Department of Education and everything. So when areas like Ndumku, they moved to Kelebian, there's not even title deeds. And some government officials decided to sell those houses to private individuals. Now at a later stage, that house, you find out that, yes, I went to the bank and then I got a bond, I paid whoever could that I paid at that time, but the government didn't come and realize that this house was used to belong to the state in the first place. That official was not even supposed to sell it. So what do I do? Because now, it really just talks of compensation. Do I get compensation there? Because the constitution says, you must first investigate. Because it doesn't mean that if I got something that was stolen, it automatically it means I'm fine. It's that's what the rule of law says in South Africa, that if I caught with a stolen property, It's all problem. It's not the state's problem. It's only as long as they can verify that. So that issue, I'm still not sure of that. So I think then we want to push it to a court because those are the challenges that this game is creating. Maybe we need to look at this issue on a serious note, not just leave it to the court, because I'll be sitting there with a property that's according to the Pilamas documentation, even though maybe I knew that it was stolen property. That means with this bill, I can easily go there and buy all the wrong properties because I know that anyway, it took time you're going to catch me, but you have to give me that money because there's going to be an agreement. That's what it's saying. And those are the rules that it's going to be creating. Thank you.
Honorable, I mean, thanks. Honorable.
Thanks,
madam.
Thanks for having me, Chair. No, I agree with Honorable Zanelli around the fact that it must be investigated on how people acquire the particular language. I think when the department was responding, is responding to that, to say that, and the responding to say, if even the value of a particular property was not in line with it was supposed to be, let me say, as my colleague was saying, the property was 1 million, but that property, how it was acquired, and also you found that that particular property is 800,000, so it must be in 800,000. I think Honorable Zanin is correct to say that it must not be the setting of the state if the land was acquired not correctly or during that apartheid era when the property was taken. But Chair, when you look at what is indicated here on 2, I think the court is the only independent body that can assist when there is a dispute. No one else. If the people are in dispute, if we are disputing amongst myself and Honorable Israel, we don't agree. We agree to disagree. Nobody will say Greer is correct or I am correct. The neutral body, which is a court, that will determine to say that, okay, that particular amount as the parliamentary advisor was indicating on 18, subsection 2, if the claimant and the bondholder, they don't agree on it, the court must decide who is supposed to pay. And it's a practice in South Africa that when you are going to court, you defend yourself, you pay for your defense, and you pay for it. That is the bottom line. My colleague is making an example with the farmers, maybe taking farm and so on. I think this bill is really covering a lot of areas. And Honorable Lamin was not here when one was saying that this bill is not about compensation, actually, it's about expropriation, you know? So when one was raising that yesterday to say that, no, it's not part of the not purpose, because this bill is not for compensation, but it's for expropriation, but it must be just. That's what we're saying yesterday. Thanks.
Members, we should also remember there's a chapter 6 that addresses litigation before going to court. I'll take you, Honorable Gray, and then I would suggest that we do break for 10, 15 minutes for tea, and we can reconvene after that. But before that, Madam Gray.
This is section 9, 1B. It says that the effect of expropriation of property is that the property remains subject to all registered rights with the exception of a mortgage bond. Now the way I may have misunderstood the legal advisor, but he said you take over the mortgage bond and you will pay off the state, meaning you the state. But here it says, well, what does it mean? The property remains subject to all registered rights with the exception of a mortgage bond. So property, the mortgage bond doesn't go with the property. So I'm not sure, is that in contradiction or what exactly does this mean? I just need clarity there.
Ms. Kuberin, if you'd like to respond to anyone else, the issue of clarity in regard to the bond.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe just to explain the issue around the mortgage bond. A mortgage bond is usually it's regarded as the mortgage is regarded as a secured credit. So legally, whenever this issue arises, they have to be linked first. So what we're saying here is that upon expropriation, the property is released. In other words, released, then the mortgage bond is cancelled. Because it was threatening the property, the state takes the property free from any encumbrances. So that is why when payment is effected, payment from the mortgage bond is effected first, because it's a secured, the mortgage is a secured creditor. I think that is the simple explanation I can give.
Honorable Chair, is a look at
that. Okay, say the bond is cancelled, so the property will be unencumbered. But who cancels the bond?
By effecting the payment, you are settling that bond. Effectively, you are cancelling. That's the process. You are paying to the mortgage.
When? The question is then when? The state pays the bond, anyone, and by when?
Yes, sir. I saw you sign language. I would like to have you to articulate through your hands up in the air.
Through you, Chair, again. I think the bill set out the process in terms of which, you know, I cannot specifically now say at this point or that point, but as parliamentary legal advisor indicated earlier, that there's a chronological order in terms of which things take place in terms of the bill. So those will unfold naturally as the process progresses. So I think maybe as we go along, you'll start to understand how this will happen.
Mr. David, I said the last word on this thing. I'm not into comment further. But then, so I understand the registration. Suppose I'm a farmer, and you need the land for whatever reason, and you decide to, you the same, decide to expropriate me, and you're going to say, we're not going to pay you more than 10 million rand. So you take over the bond, you say, but there's a bond. When you take over the bond, you release me. I lose and I've got to move. We don't even say on what date and how quick. You could say you take expropriation, you take possession tomorrow, the date of expropriation, and by tomorrow I'll stay out because we don't give me a reasonable time. Then may have a bond that's more than what you're prepared to pay me. So I lose my place of accommodation, my home. I lose my means of production because the farm's also your business, it's your means of production. And you still sit with some debt. And you've got nowhere to go, you don't have an alternative income, and you just sit with a massive debt. That scenario is possible under the current situation, the way I see it. And that surely can't be acceptable.
Deputy Minister, okay. First of all, the fund that is part of our way of compensation must be just and equitable. Must be just and equitable. Okay. So the issues that you are raising, including some of the other issues that other members have raised, would all be factors that would need to be taken into account. So the fact that this is where you live, it's your sole source of income, all of those would be factors. I mean, the Bill of Rights explicitly says your current use of the property, etc., etc. All of those are factors that must be weighed, both by the appropriating authority making the offers, and if the matter goes to mediation, the composition goes to mediation, or if finally it goes to the court. All the kinds of factors that you raise would certainly be part and parcel of any argument around compensation. So, I mean, the assumption is that the final offer by a Nazi state
integrity of is what's going to happen, and it's going to happen as soon as tomorrow. So I think it's unfounded, and the use of the courts would not be guided by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights if it comes to a court or if a mediation process. So I think that's it. When is it paid? Well, as we say, let it not later than the day in which the state takes possession, the expropriating authority. So that's not later than that is when compensation is compared. Some of the other matters are not covered in this piece of legislation. So for instance, the illegal occupation, which the Honourable Flamini referred to, the department, I think the Honourable Maglobe refers to this, the department has currently got an operation called Bring Back, which I think should be Take Back, of exactly buildings, houses and so on that are illegally occupied. That would be undoing a criminal act and not expropriation. So it would be a different legal process that would need to be followed. There could also be cases of reckless lending by banks. That's not unknown. And again, expropriation acts or bill can't cover that, but that's where something like National Credit Act would come into play. So if you've got a huge mortgage bond which was actually reckless lending, you can show that it was reckless lending on the part of a bank, then presumably it's compensation you get, because the compensation needs to be judged and equitable. If that compensation is far less than the bond which was recklessly loaned to you, if that can show, then the expropriated owner and bondholder could take it, for instance, to the National Credit Act or through some other legal process. But I think we can't try to do everything. What we're trying to do is empower a just and equitable process and fair process of expropriation for public interest and public purpose. That's what we're trying to achieve here. There are many other things that it's unrealistic to think that we need as South Africa to deal with some of these issues that colleagues are raising. But we can't put more into the bill. I mean, I think it's inappropriate to be seen.
Deputy Minister, thank you very much. Madam Magrom,
I'm
going to indulge you, but I would like us to take a tea break. There are many passers by there, and
you'll
be accusing me of fruitless and wasteful expenditure.
Yes, I think what my colleague is raising is greatly covered with this bill. I think the Deputy Minister has indicated that you talk about and equitable compensation. But if you read Section 7, it indicates from the beginning, before you say it's a short notice, it's a process, because it's saying if no agreement of the amount of compensation payable has been reached between the expropriating authority and the owner or holder of the rights within 40 days, so there is that 40 days that you talk to the people affected of the expropriating authority receiving the statement contemplated in Section 4. The expropriating authority must decide whether or not to proceed with the expropriation. And when you read at Section 7, Section D, Section Roman Figure 2, it says again, after you have that 40 days, you are not agreeing, it says to continue with negotiation on compensation in accordance with Section 16. It must inform the owner or the holder of the right accordingly in writing within the reason. There are a lot of negotiations, not just a short space of time, 4 hours. That was 40 days when you don't agree. Enter into negotiation. So I think it's a lot of time that is being covered on the notice and on the disagreement around the issue of compensation. It's not just now, tomorrow you're out. It has been a process already. Thank you.
Honourable Matop, thank you very much for reminding us that the bill, as we crafted, is indeed seeks that we have a just and equitable outcome. We rise or adjourn for tea. We back at 11:20. Thank you.